This is Michael Coe from the Punk Rock and Politics Podcast, and you're listening to some of the best podcasts available on the internet, only on the No Phony Podcast Network.
Welcome to Heroes Garage, where we preview and review science fiction, fantasy, superhero, and once in a while, horror TV shows and movies. Bill, how are you doing today?
Doing good, Tom. It's the season. Tis the season coming up here. So
yes, it is.
We're the household of mine is going crazy because we're hosting two Christmases. It's very crazy. So crazy that a week before Christmas, we don't even have a tree up. So that's how nuts it is around here. Yeah.
Well, this is how much control my wife and I need. We have a tree up year round that we just change the ornaments on because we don't want to be caught in a position where we don't have a tree.
I like that strategy.
Yeah. It's like the Batman approach. We are always prepared. So we just changed the ornaments on it. We're not, you know, we don't have little kids in the house anymore. We are empty nesters. And so we can be a little bit more creative. And I have to say that I really like this modality because I was the one in charge of taking the tree down and loading it up into a box and making sure I didn't destroy it every year. And just losing that responsibility has alone, anytime I can take responsibility off my shoulders. Within reason. What's that?
No more pressure.
Yeah, I mean, something less to destroy. So guess what else we want to make sure doesn't get destroyed here?
What's that, Tom?
Our interest in The Mandalorian.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the last episode, I think we reached all-time lows in the sense of the story. Its lack of complexity, it feeling like Kung Fu and David Carradine, and it felt like they lost the thread on some of these storylines that made this series interesting in the first two or three episodes.
Right.
So the story summary, what for those of you listening and who have not partaken in our podcast before, welcome for one, and we're glad you're here. But number two, spoilers will begin now. We will tell what happens in this story. We will break down a critique of the story, the characters. We'll talk about the visual effects and entertainment value. And then we'll get into predictions, sure to be. So we'll see how our predictions do this time. Are you ready for the story, Bill?
I'm ready. Fire away, Tom.
Okay, I have two sentences. Mando and Baby Yoda join a band of dangerous crew members to raid a prison ship. He outfoxes them to get the reward. Done.
Wow. That's what we really call a summary.
Yeah, I mean, that's for your attention deficit crew. But as simplistic and straightforward as this story is, I am very interested, Bill, in getting your take, your critique on this story.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is as we and you, you know, definitely have made the Kung Fu series of random stories and episodes of the Mando and Baby Yoda traveling together, right? And
right.
If there's one thing you need, if you're going to travel the universe, it's money, because that's how you pay for fuel. Because really, you do need fuel.
Yes, you do.
But the only way it pays for a fuel is money. So being a bounty hunter, you know, he has to make money. So as we have already seen in the previous episodes, he is, you know, going to find jobs. and pick on old relationships to get jobs so he could get money that's inevitably going to pay for fuel. So this episode, yeah, it's the prison break episode. It's getting with his old team, old relationships, old people. It feels like a true Western prison break type of episode, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we felt that Star Wars is definitely in the Western type of genre. And so to me, the only thing that changes is really the space aspect of it. And it truly feels like it is a classic prison break with backstabbing and all, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I thought go ahead.
No, I mean, so it was exciting in the episode because you're almost waiting for this because there is a lot of tension, a lot of angst, but you could definitely see that there is a ploy here to turn on Mando as soon as his services has been rendered, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think I just want to piggyback on that. I thought there was even the story, when you just look at it and plot it out on a piece of paper, if anyone's doing it at home at night, maybe late at night, they would see that a fairly straight line on that sheet of paper.
Yeah, pretty much.
However, this episode was much more interesting because of the new characters and guest stars, in my opinion. So it starts off when Mando meets Mark Boone Jr. as Ranzar Malk. And people know Mark Boone Jr. from what famous show?
You tell me, Tom.
Sons of Anarchy. So he's kind of the hefty, bulky, older gentleman with thick hair. And just his presence, I don't know if he's just was made for this role or I've seen enough episodes of Sons of Anarchy, but I believed what he was selling and I liked his character.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, he really sold that outlaw, that even though you're catapulted in space, he's a character that you definitely could feel like is present day. I thought another surprise was Bill Burr. Was it?
Yep.
Was it Bill?
I was going
Bill
there Burr. Next. Yep.
No, and he was a pleasant surprise. And you know, when you get these comedians that could cross over into drama, I mean, just think about where he has been in his career, and he's done a lot of TV, a lot of comedy, films. And so just to be able to get an episode in The Mandalorian, and I thought he sold his character really well as a gunslinger. I mean, he also was in, Breaking Bad too. So he has definitely, had that reputation that he can do these crossovers.
Yeah, so, where Mark Boone was kind of the thick-haired, greasy-haired biker. Bill was that bald, shiny head, maybe biker, with kind of a comedic look to him. But then he buckled down when he needed to. And then there's also, I think it's Clancy Brown as Berg, which is a pretty straightforward character, but they didn't mess it up.
he's the muscle, right?
Yeah.
He plays the muscle character who is just mean.
Yeah.
So, as a character, he did well. And then you have one more. You have two more, really.
Yeah, Matt Lanter is Devon. And then Richard Ayoade as the voice of Zero. That's not so important.
Right.
Zero is the droid, right? Which is a main character in this episode, though, because he holds a lot of weight. Yeah. He kind of symbolizes a connection between what a lot of people, when they talk about, well, to me, there's a connection to Rogue One and kind of what the robots looked like in Rogue One.
Yeah, I mean, he actually was very human-esque. I thought they made this droid more human, I felt, than robotic. Now the bounty droid, I thought, was very humorous in the third episode, but he was really droid. Mm-hmm. This one felt human droid, which in Rogue One they have these droids that feel like they are have a human personality, and they did a great job. I thought it was a very good job, actually.
He has to do a heavy lift when you think about it, because you need a trope in there that connects some dots for the story itself. He holds the story together in a lot of ways, because you have to figure out, well, how are they going to get the technology to break into a prison ship, work its way through all that defenses? Well, you have a MacGuffin there. It's called a droid.
Oh, he's the droid. It's a writer. It's a screenwriter's friend. Think about it. You really don't need it, droids. What they do is they fill in the void of screenwriters. Mm-hmm. Well, how are they going to do that? Well, a droid's going to do it. Well, how are they going to get the secret passageway? The droid's going to do it.
It worked in Star Wars 1977.
The droid does fill the void. Yeah, there you go. If the answer is, if I have to connect the dots in my missing pieces, it's the droid. The droid can do it. The droid can do anything.
Yeah, and if you do it right, which I think they did in this one, it's actually entertaining and it glues some things together and it all kind of works. The other character is Natalia Tena, or Tena, as Xi'an. Yeah, she was interesting.
Yeah, with her brother, who is the prisoner, Quinn. I'm sorry.
That was Quinn. So that is Ismael Cruz Cordova played Quinn. So now she was interesting. Her look was a connection back to a species of being, an alien, as it were. Although, can you really call anyone in the Star Wars universe an alien?
No, they're all aliens. Yeah, I think we're the ones that are the standards.
Yeah, we're the true misfits in here, but she has that look, and I'm trying to think, is that going back to Jabba the Hutt? Is that it?
Yes, she was the dancer in front of Jabba the Hutt. He wants to give her a kiss, a.k.a. lick, and she refuses, and he opens up the floor, and she falls to her death to be eaten alive. So there you go for a reference.
Think of that species when you
She's a Twi'lek. I think that's the name. Twi'lek? Does that sound right? Anyway, yeah, that's the species that she is. Yeah, they bring in a lot of nostalgia, into the series. And I think that's part of the Mandalorian that keeps people engaged. If the story is lacking is some of these characters that show up in species, and you get to see a little more of them that you didn't see in the other Star Wars series. So that becomes, you're getting a little more backstory to these species, even though they can be criminals. But there's something to them, like they have the fangs, and they all have fangs, and they're a kind of wormy type of creatures, more nocturnal. So it's interesting, because she had like a vampire, and then the other guy had the horns, and he had more of a devilish look. So this is definitely a more sinister group of people. Not as, I would say, Disney friendly.
Yes, and we are talking about Xi'an and her brother, Quinn, when we are making these statements. And they also add a little bit of mystery, a little mystique to it. We want a little darkness here, at least those of us who like a little darkness mixed with our light, because it makes the light shine so much brighter. Right, Bill?
Yes. So, Tom, what did you think of the actual prison break? Because that's where the majority of the time was set, was getting Quinn out of there. What did you feel that whole scene was like?
I felt the tension in there, which tells me that they sequenced things in the right order, because it could have very easily fallen into the abyss of I've seen this a million times, which I have. I've seen, and you have seen, a million of these kinds of sequences in science fiction shows over the years. And so I think they build some tension here because I want to see them succeed and get out of the... I'm trying to think, I guess my mind just centers around this. Like, why is there tension? Like, why did I feel it? And I think one of it is that Mando is with a group of dangerous crew members that he doesn't know all that well. And little baby Yoda is hiding in the ship. And in that ship is Zero. And at one point, there's this parallel little story going on within the story where Zero is sensing that baby Yoda is in the ship and is trying to find baby Yoda. And at the same time, they're trying to get past all these droids and find a way to the prisoner that they want to break out. And that was compelling to me.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think the first part is when they make the discovery that baby Yoda is on the ship was very, I think I felt for the first time suspenseful in a while of one of these series that you really don't know because the characters are more sinister. That, Mando can't really show his cards that much, right?
Right.
So he is, what's great about Mando is he has to play these mind games. He's always in this game of chess where they're playing checkers. So, that's what I like watching him of how he's going to work within these scenarios. And, fortunately, everything kind of collided with the story that they had to land and then put the pet down. They didn't even see him as like a baby or a kid. They viewed him as a pet, which is interesting because the Bay Lady immediately saw him as a child. Everybody else sees him as a child, but these folks see him as a pet, which says a lot about them as characters. Not all together as in touch with, I hate to say humanity, but just in touch with any kind of sensitivity. More primal. Yeah.
They've been satiating the primal nerve, that reptilian part of the brain, for so long. they pretty much embody.
Exactly. It's like, it's small, it's a pet. They haven't probably even seen a child probably until they were children.
that's perfect. And so they have no idea what to do with this thing. But I think that's why.
Exactly.
Although I came up with that completely on the fly. But I think it's because that Mando and the baby Yoda are separated, the baby Yoda. And so then I'm just wondering if they've kind of layered that in here. The baby Yoda tucked away in his little crib. But Mando is separated from baby Yoda.
Are you using Christmas theme?
Yeah, I stopped. You know what? I didn't want to be on the nose with that. I stopped just short, just to wet the whistle enough to get people thinking. But at one point, the armor-plated Mando is on his own, and he what's going to happen. You know he's going to end up having to fight these four characters, right? But even when it does happen, I was surprised and happy that they threw him in the cell and took off to leave him for dead.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a very common script. I think where the intrigue is and always will be in these type of scenes or scenarios is how will they escape and does it make sense?
Thank you.
Right? I mean, it can't be so fantastic and that you're like, oh, brother. But you want to see Mando use his craftiness and his skill and how he's able to get out of a locked digital cell. And I thought it was just awesome, honestly.
Yes.
Grabbing the robot, ripping its arm off, putting its, whatever into the computer to release. I thought it was so cool. I really got a lot. I thought that whole episode, that whole series of events was really fascinating, how he was able to get out and start going after the other crew members.
Yeah, I thought that was perfect. And he reminds me a little bit. Mando has a little bit of Batman in him. And
oh, gosh, yeah,
he does. They're borrowing from that persona quite a bit. And I thought it was believable.
I would say even Iron Man too. Honestly, I think it's a cross between the two.
Yeah,
because because Marvel now owns Disney, or Disney owns Marvel, so you know.
Yeah, I do know that, but
DC references.
Well, I think they're always competing with each other and trying to one up each other, though. They are. They're trying to do what the other one is not able to do on screen with a character that they should be able to do it with. And no, that wasn't a dig at Warner Brothers, but maybe it was. The Cable. Okay, so Iron Man uses laser beams and really high tech. Batman uses cables, and Mando used the cables. So.
Yep.
I just had, that's where I went.
He's
it
pretty
was,
good
you
with
know,
that cable. He's, yeah, really, he's really good with that cable.
Cable is earthy. It's granular. It's got strands and fibers to it. So there's more of a contextual feel to a cable being used versus something more high tech, which I appreciate. I also like the brutality of it, where they just rip the arm off and you have, you know, robot sockets, you know, strewn all about. I thought that was good. There's a lot more brutality, but not over the top in this. So it didn't go to DC levels of brutality, but it definitely, the stakes were a little bit higher. And I think some of that did have to do with the acting, and some of it probably had to do with the sequencing of the plot, where they're paralleling different things. So it's not just a straight line through the story like many of these episodes have been. So, Bill, visual effects, entertainment value. Where does this land for you?
I just want, before we jump there, I wanted to say something is I think what's really very important here that we're seeing is Mando actually changing his code too.
Okay.
Is that he is completely changed as a Mandalorian, or at least the Mandalorian that they know, because, you know, when he started going after each one of these members of the group, I thought by the end, you know, as well as Quinn, thought that he had killed them all.
Right.
And to see them at the end that they weren't killed, that they were locked up in prison, shows that he has a different approach to, or at least affection to life. Even when they killed the only human that was aboard the ship, Mando did not like that.
No. Who else do you know that doesn't kill?
Batman. Oh, you made me say it.
I rest my case.
Oh, you're so right. So he's Batman, and I thought that was very telling, very insightful for a script, because I think in the last two episodes we kind of pranced around some kind of stories that really didn't show any character development, any character insight. It just was face value, and this had a little more depth to it.
I agree.
And I liked, which made me like it more. So, and then going to one other part of the plot was really interesting, was when the little cat and mouse game with Baby Yoda and Zero. Right.
I love
in the
that.
Ship. What'd you think of that?
I love that. I love the way that they tease Yoda as a space user, as a force user. speaking of spacey and space out, that's me, not Baby Yoda. Baby Yoda is not spaced out. Baby Yoda has the force at its disposal, but uses its craftiness to get out of the bind. Just when you think that Baby Yoda is going to use that little hand, who shows up? Mando. And I love that. I loved it.
Okay, so I thought it was neat because they give Baby Yoda kind of like a cat type of, because he's hunting them down, and where's Baby Yoda? He's not a Baby Yoda. He should be there, but he's not there. You know, so we don't know. Like, he is using this force to move from one area of the ship to each other. I mean, how did he end up back in his closet, right?
Nice.
And because he shouldn't have, because the robot has the keen senses and the sensors and all that. And so I believe Baby Yoda was using some, you know, part of the Force to elude the droid. But I did love the scene when he was raising his arm up, just ready to strike the Force on the robot. And you thought he did, and then Mando's behind him. But I got to tell you, I really wished he used the Force on the robot.
You do? Yeah, I mean,
I do.
You're highlighting a point here, Bill, that I...
For a Yoda.
You're highlighting a point that eluded probably many of our listeners, and that's why we're here, to educate and to illuminate these areas of the script that may have been overlooked, and that was the biology versus bionic nature of that battle. And right. I love that. And, of course, biology wins every time in the long run. And the bionic zero is done away with. And they made it interesting, though. It wasn't so straightforward, but it did feel dangerous. I was worried for Baby Yoda.
I was worried, too. And I, even though I knew back in my mind that he was going to, something was going to happen, but the fact that he was going to last resort and use the Force, I was just ready to have him, let him have it. But, you know, it kind of had a little, to me, a hero's cliche of he just shows up at the right time and shoots the droid. Right. So,
yeah.
That to me was a little, I want Baby Yoda to be Yoda, right? I want him to use this Force. I mean, they're really playing off the cute and cuddly for all these episodes, and doggone it, I want some Force. Dang it.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't help themselves. It's kind of their fallback is into the cliche and trope brand of shows, and they had to do it again. But I thought that it was, for the most part, this was a stronger episode. Visually and entertainment-wise, I thought it was stronger. I love the visuals at the beginning with the X-Wing site. The X-Wing is kind of showing up at the end. When that I'm not at the end. So I started my sentence and I said that I loved the beginning when the X-Wing showed up, but they didn't show up in what I was referencing until the end of the episode is what I really mean.
That's what you meant.
Yes.
That's what you meant. I mean, the visual is just great. I mean, the X-Wing and the ships, you can't complain. Visually, they have the Star Wars world down, and it's great. And, you know, what's really interesting is the writer on this was Christopher Yost, Y-O-S-T, and he wrote Thor Ragnarok and the Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes and a famous also Japanese anime series called Cowboy Bebop. So he's a real accomplished comic-based writer. So... and he's written comic books too. So, I think for him to do an episode like this, it showed some depth in the, 35 minutes that he was allotted. And it was a good, and he has to stay within the lines of the ultimate storyline here, but I thought he did a phenomenal job with the characters. The director moved them well. It was, even though a standard jailbreak, it was still exciting and thrilling. You had your gun battles with the droids, you had the betrayals, the captures, and you know, and then the payoff. He still wins in the end. He gets his money, and they all try to act like, you know, nothing happened, which was perfect. It was a perfect kind of Western. It wasn't great, but it was entertaining, and it was a lot better than what we received in the last few episodes.
I agree with all of that. So that leaves us at, I believe, if we're ready, Bill, predictions. And I'm not going to say sure to be right anymore, because we didn't really hit our predictions all that correctly in this last attempt. Where do we start here? Mando has his reward. He has his ship. He took off. The X-Wings destroyed that little, whatever that thing was, that space docking port that he landed on. So now he's pretty much free and out in space with Baby Yoda. And the strand that's still connected is there's a bounty on Baby Yoda.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, the last two episodes is Jon Favreau's. So he's back to directing the last two.
Okay.
And we have two more to go through. And honestly, I would have to say they have to build suspense to the fact that somebody is catching up to him. And, I would say that figure that we saw that was in the gunslinger one, they got to make a reveal to get to episode 8. So you know how this always works, Tom, is that chapter 7 is a jump to chapter 8. Mm-hmm. So again, since we already know they're traveling between worlds, he's got to travel to a world. And this one's, I'm assuming he's probably better tracked than he was before. And he probably has a rude awakening that's going to more likely cause a little more tension, and that sets you up for some kind of finale for chapter 8. So
I
didn't get a lot of details. Yeah. But this is the setup episode.
Yeah. I have this belief, not sure if it's anchored in much truth, but I have a belief that the second to last episode, at least these, I think it's based on my viewing patterns in observations of the Netflix Marvel series, which had completely different creative teams. That was Jeff Loeb, who was at the head of all that, not Favreau. So who knows if he takes on some of these same kind of strategies and tactics. But it always felt like the series was over at the second to last episode, and then the last episode was just basically cleanup. Are they going to do that in this? Yeah. Is this next one? Would you expect that most of the meat and potatoes to be kind of put out on the table in this one, and then the rest in episode 8, they're just cleaning up the scraps?
No, I think that episode 8 is going to be a cliffhanger it could be one of those that maybe Baby Yoda is actually captured and Mando can't do anything about it. I know that's when we get into chapter 7, that should be our chapter 8, but I think that my prediction of skipping two ahead would be that I could see Baby Yoda actually being caught and Mando being injured, that he can't do anything about it.
Okay, that's episode 8. So episode 7 is probably they're going to run into these crafty net-like characters.
Marauders.
Yeah. Someone's going to have the wherewithal to kind of corner, and it's going to feel a little bit more. And maybe that's what they're building towards, though, right? Like 4 and 5 was really Ewok-y and, kung fu-y, and not a whole lot happens and it's peaceful. And now you get to episode 6, the danger level definitely goes up, and then 7 goes up again.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's all I got, though, Bill.
No, I don't want to speculate anymore. I think we're set up into he's got a, every place that he's gone to, except for one, I believe, he knew where he was. I mean, the when he was in with the native, so to speak, that was a mystery. But every single one after that, he has known, he's familiar with where he has to go, which has put him in a dangerous spot. So is he going to go into familiar, or is he going to go into obscurity? That's really the question of what's going to happen in chapter 7.
Yeah, I'll say my one last thing is that I would not be surprised if he gets blindsided coming up here.
Because
if you think about it, space is a vacuum. And
right.
Unless you really know where you're going, you really don't want to just jump to light speed just anywhere. They established in this last episode that his ship is only at 67% and it's got a lot of problems. They didn't do anything to fix those problems in this episode. So they may have played a little bit of a long game there in planting the seed of doubt in that ship's capacity to do a ton of work in open space, and I wouldn't be surprised if they got a little blindsided and we ran into something a little bit more treacherous. So I think we're there, Bill. I think we're to the end of our review of Mandalorian, The Prisoner, which we will call Prison Break. So guess what time it is?
It's time for Star Wars. Wait, was that just Star Wars?
That was Star Wars. It's time to talk about bridging The Last Jedi to Rise of Skywalker. Because
In a couple of days, Tom.
Yeah, so I guess the most important question is, when do you plan on seeing the movie?
I believe Monday.
Okay.
Family coming in from out of town. Yeah. I believe that's on everybody's docket to see The Rise of Skywalker.
And I am hoping to see it Thursday night in the dead of night. Actually,
oh my gosh, are you going to be sitting out in the cold, Tom? Are you sitting out in the cold?
You know what? I'm not going to freak out anymore. Although I do have the ability to buy my ticket ahead of time and not freak out. But Eric, who is a once in a while fill-in co-host, him and I are going to go see it Thursday night together. And
nice.
I'm looking forward to that. I was actually looking this time around. I wanted to see this movie with somebody else that I know. Right. Of course, the theater was packed and I was a live human beings last time, but I didn't know any of them. And right. I wanted to be next to someone. Although that didn't work for Endgame. I was pretty critical of Endgame, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were. Holy smokes.
Oh, man.
You had that smell upside down.
It didn't help that Adrian, another co-host of ours, who guest fills once a year, was chomping and talking. And I mean, he was like the loudest cohort in a movie theater. I've said it was out of control.
Oh, I love it. I love it when people, and it's hysterical that the movie theater is their living room. And sometimes you forget that it's not. I know that when I get with my wife's family, that we tend to be the loudest group in the audience.
Louder than you, Bill?
We just have a lot. Well, I am the leader of that, but, we saw the last time we were all together with this group, and they're coming in from out of town, is we saw the Muppet movie, which I absolutely loved.
Oh, man.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And we were so loud that our kids were like, what's up with these guys? They're ready to just leave the theater. We just had a ton of fun.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think this one, I'll be a little more self-contained just you because think? I think as we segue into the movie, I don't know. I have a lot of questions, Tom. A lot of questions.
What's the biggest question burning on your mind that you would like to ask me about the upcoming movie, Bill?
Well, Tom, what do you feel is driving Rey as the main character into this episode?
Man, that's a great question. That's a great question, actually. I'm glad you asked that question. It's an important question because in theory, we should be able to answer that question. And then we would know that the storytellers and the directors were doing their job because that's what we should be knowing. Right. Okay, so
exactly.
She wants to know who her father and mother are, even though
right.
everybody in The Last Jedi got all spastic and thought that they were told who the father and mother were, but I don't think that answer was sufficient. I believe that she mm-hmm. still wants to know. She still is orphaned and doesn't belong yet. The questions, the scabs and wounds that were sliced open and re-sliced open in Last Jedi in Rey had to do with her identity. She had she felt that she's always had a larger calling, a deeper purpose, and she wanted to find answers. And Luke didn't provide right. all those answers for her. And guess what, folks? No wise sage necessarily tells people the answer. They don't do that. They stroke the interest. They point them in a direction. They ask intriguing questions. And it's up to the young hero, as Adrian taught us in the hero's journey that he would quote almost every episode when he was on these very airwaves. That young hero has to figure those answers out for themselves. And I think that right. this is Rey's episode to figure out what her purpose is in life and really know what it is. And by the end of this, she's going to know who she is, what has her in this universe. And that is what I think. What do you think, Mr. Bill?
Well, just to kind of add to that is you have this huge plot, right, with the resistance that is coinciding with her own personal discovery, because the conflict of the resistance and, you know, these battles, it's almost that she doesn't have the time to really discover her purpose and who she was, because these outside forces are getting in the way. I would even say Kylo Ren is one of those that is getting in the way of her discovery. So, which makes it interesting, because it's all about purpose, but your purpose is involved in the settings that you're around. So there's a lot of depth there. And I think you're right with the way that she is really trying to discover who she is, but at the same time, master her newfound interest or talent in the ability. That's, I had to take three times to get the right word, with the Force, and how it actually became so much a part of her.
Yeah, I think you're so right.
It's very complicated. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry to slice right into your, hold your thought, because I want to piggyback on a thought that you had. Hold that thought. Now, Kylo Ren, I think, was a distraction. She thought that her purpose was to save Kylo Ren. And I think for a lot of Star Wars fans, they thought, you know, Luke saved Vader. Here we are. Rey saves Kylo. But I think what we learn is that that's not the grander purpose. And that was more of a distraction. No. There's a larger end game for her, pardon the mixture there. So go on, carry on, my friend.
Well, she seems to be one of the most powerful Jedis that has ever come to an existence that didn't have a mentor. Mm-hmm. So she is truly flying at her own ability, which really needs to be compared to Yoda. Where we, you know, when we dissect and analyze the Mandalorian and we see Baby Yoda, as a child that has the ability of the Force naturally.
You want this so badly, don't you, Bill? Rey.
I know I do, and I know I'm not going to get
it. You can't stay out of the abyss.
I can't. But Rey, I think, is in that as well. I think. It's her ability. She's fascinating. I just wish that they didn't throw so much plots and subplots at her that you really could make it about her. But they want it as any Star Wars movie, larger than life, larger than Rey, and that's kind of unfortunate, I think.
Yeah, and I think we hit on the two probably most compelling story points, and I think what got a lot of nostalgia folks, you know, all up in arms, because they had tried to make this really linear and rigid comparison between Han Solo and the non-force, imperial or whatever the bad guy group is called. These human like characters didn't really live up to their billing in Last Jedi. So we're talking about Finn. We're talking about the pilot whose name I Poe Dameron, Rose, and all of that. And I think in this storyline, they have a story in here because we see them riding horses, don't we, Bill?
Yes, we do. We see the gallant last charge.
Yeah, I'm wondering
all the glory.
What are they doing, and how will it feed into the larger narrative in a meaningful way?
Well, then you see that really then the last aspect of this story is really Luke Skywalker and, you know, all the Star Wars channel really flows through Luke. I mean, even going through the Phantom Menace to the beginnings of Darth Vader, And afterwards, Luke is, and even come on, it's the title, right? Rise of Skywalker. So is it Rise of Luke Skywalker, or is it Rise of Rey? Is this, you know, is Rey and Luke, you know, is she the Skywalker? So anyway, it's, you know, all channels have gone through Luke in the Star Wars series, even if it wasn't about Luke and the Phantom Menace and the Clone Wars and the ones that we all like, Revenge of the Sith, and we all want to forget. because it was the beginning of Darth Vader that led to Luke Skywalker. And yes. Then, you know, now it's post Skywalker and the Force Awakens and so The Last Jedi, but it still has that tie in to Luke Skywalker. So again, it's the finality of Luke Skywalker. I see it. I hope to it, because I felt like The Force Awakens, to me, the only thing that I really liked was the complexity of Luke and how Luke's anger and rage was there because of his failure with Kylo Ren. And it was very dramatic and very, you just see the regret and pain. And it was very, it's a quality that sometimes we go through. And I thought it was very human and touching. And so I think that, to me, is going to, I need that conclusion with the Skywalker.
I like that. I'm glad you said that, because that is interesting. And I think a lot of people want to see Luke redeem himself on screen. They're not satisfied with the Force ghost projection and taking out the Force One pretty much entirely on his own on that planet. That wasn't enough for them. So they want to see that character redeemed in this next film. I know I'm sounding very sardonic and sarcastic, although I do believe everything I just got done saying. I think that we overlook how powerful you have to be to project your image across the galaxy and fight another Force user and fool them into believing they're in a real lightsaber fight.
Yes, it just goes to show, when you're a master of the Force, you are a master of the Force, Tom.
Yes, you are. So those are kind of the things that are on our minds as far as the upcoming movie. Any final words you want to drop on the audience as far as what you're looking forward to? What you need to...
You wanted me to come up with a tidbit, and this is going to, I want to put this in your brain, because you are going to think about it when you watch this film. I'm going to make you think about it, Tom.
Oh no, I'm being controlled.
So you are. So, obviously, J.J. Abrams is the director, and he's one of the screenplay. But there's also another gentleman that has a lead scriptwriter credit to him, and his name is Chris Terrio. Do you know anything about Chris Terrio, Tom?
I do not.
Has produced?
I do not, but I'm on the edge of my seat.
Okay, so he won an Oscar for Best Adaptation of Argo. The Ben Affleck film, which was very good, but that was an adaptation. That means it was It was another source that he adapted to make a screenplay, and he won an Oscar for it, which shows a lot of talent. But that talent kind of waned a little bit, because he then wrote Batman versus Superman and Justice League.
Well, let me say one thing. let me come to, what's his name? What's his name again?
Chris Terrio. Oh, I had to drop this on you.
That's a great one. I'm so glad. This is another 20-minute discussion. So that writer, I will not hang that on Justice League, because that movie had 15 writers. At one point, they gave Joss Whedon writing credit for Justice League. So let's just say that that's out, because that's a hot mess and he didn't get a chance to really write his true vision, or he did and they tore it to shreds. Batman versus Superman, however, that's interesting, isn't it?
I know.
I guess it goes to show, when you do creative work, not everybody's going to love what you do. I'm going to say this right. I really thought Batman vs. Superman was a good movie. I liked it when I first saw it. it was compelling. Most people didn't like the Martha thing. That pretty much did everybody in. And that loves DC. They also didn't like how Superman was grumpy and moody the whole time and then gets beat up by a non-powered person. That didn't really sit well with people. But as far as writing goes...
I like the movie. You start picking apart the movie that you just liked.
I liked it probably because, well, Wonder Woman shows up and she smashes those bands together and stops a monster.
Oh, that was like the last like 5 minutes of the movie.
I like that.
Okay, so he's not the only writer, but okay. He's a lead writer, and so I'm. When I saw that, it kind of makes sense to me that I could see Star Wars kind of having all these plots, all these different characters, and they're trying to bring them all together, which was why we had such a hot mess with the second movie, right? With The Force Awakens, when they should have just really focused more on...
Last Jedi. Last Jedi is the second one, right?
Right, Last Jedi, I'm sorry. That's right, I'm sorry. I'm mixing my movies with Rey. It made it more about Rey and didn't have to go through all these sidesteps of things with Poe and with Finn. That whole 30 minutes of Finn was just ridiculous. But
wasn't Last Jedi written by Rian Johnson? I think it was.
Yes. So I'm wondering if he is. It's going to be interesting if he has. Been given the ability to try to loosen up or tie up all these loose knots here in this Star Wars episode. And what's very difficult, Tom, in this is, you have this huge showdown, right, between the two. But then you also have to have the conclusion of the army and the battle. And you can't forget about that. So it's a very difficult balancing act. That's all I have to say. And I'm more curious to see how they do it and my impression out of it. So that's all I have to say.
Yeah. Well, you've definitely put it in our brains that there's a chance that this movie could be just as bad as Justice League. Well, that's my takeaway. Although I own that movie, and I do go back to that movie from time to time when I want some good feels, because there are definitely some good feels in that movie with Flash.
Flash was cool. Flash was cool.
And
right? It's
the scene in the park where Superman is fighting the entire Justice League, and we're reminded, embarrassingly, because we like to forget that Superman is the Justice League.
That's right.
Because without him, there is no justice because he can't beat anybody up because they're not strong enough without Superman.
Oh, I love it. So, you know, when Superman goes on vacation, where are you going?
You're like, okay, this isn't going to work. It's almost like the whole universe is like, okay, this whole universe just doesn't work with a dead Superman in it. So let's get him back. Uppy up, wake up, get
funny.
Back.
So I guess in conclusion, Tom, is that we really have high expectations, but my bar is low in this movie, which probably helps the viewing of it. I'm not going in with high hopes because I really didn't have high hopes. I didn't feel good coming out of the last movie. So it was one of those that, you know how you feel when we first saw Star Wars is we just couldn't wait for the next. We couldn't wait for Empire Strikes Back, right?
Yeah.
It was just we were on the edge of Return of the Jedi. We just couldn't wait for those. And this one, it's like, oh, yeah, Star Wars movie's coming. Great. I can't wait. I'm excited, but I'm not really expecting much. And unfortunately, I think that was due to the last movie. Okay, so that's where I stand. I want to be pleasantly surprised, but I'm tempering my expectations.
So not to have rose-colored glasses on, but I have reviewed The Last Jedi numerous times. I like it more and more every time I watch it. I believe that this movie is going to be one of the best movies I have ever seen in my life. I believe that I'm going to be walking out of the theater, Classic Cinemas in Oak Park, Illinois, on Lake Street, and I am going to be singing and jumping and hopping and skipping, wondering, when am I going to see this movie again? Because I don't want to miss the opportunity to see it on the big screen another time. I believe that, actually. I think I'm going to love this film. I think J.J. Abrams is going to make me love this film because he has that dramatic effect thing going. And I actually believe that. My lack of hope in this franchise has been restored. And so we'll see, right? I mean, I felt that way when I sat down at the Regal Theater in Warrenville when Last Jedi came out, and that was in the middle of the night as well. And I walked out confused and dazed, but this time I think I'm going to be walking out just thinking this was a great film.
I can't wait, Tom. I can't wait. I know I will get the text. Sound asleep.
Yeah.
But I will wake up to
you. I'm going to start texting you at 1-2 in the morning. Early Friday morning, you're going to be getting texts.
I will have my phone off. Okay. So I'll awaken to Tom's texts first thing in the morning your response.
I think you will. So
I hope, Tom, you're right. I hope, Tom, you're right.
I know. Well, for now and until next time, this has been Heroes Garage.
Bye now. Thank you.